thought that was great. But the question then becomes, how shall we rise? And we're going to read 1 Corinthians 15, 35 through 49. But someone will say, how are the dead raised, and with what kind of body do they come? You fool, that which you sow does not come to life unless it dies. And that which you sow, you do not sow the body which is to be, but a bare grain, perhaps of wheat or of something else. But God gives it a body just as he wished, and to each of the seeds a body of its own. All flesh is not the same flesh, but there is one flesh of men, another flesh of beasts, another of birds, and another of fish. There are also heavenly bodies and earthly bodies, but the glory of the heavenly is one, and the glory of the earthly is another. There's one glory of the sun, another glory of the moon, and another glory of the star, for stars differ from star in glory. So also is the resurrection of the dead. It is sown a perishable body, it's raised an imperishable body. Sown in dishonor, it is raised in glory. Sown in weakness, it is raised in power. Does any of this remind you of the song we just heard? It is sown a natural body, it is raised a spiritual body. If there is a natural body, there is also a spiritual body. So also it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living soul. The last Adam became a life-giving spirit. However, the spiritual is not first, but the natural, then the spiritual. First man was from the earth, earthy. The second man is from heaven. As is the earthly, so also are those who are earthy. And as is the heavenly, so also are those who are heavenly. Just as we have borne the image of the earthy, we will also bear the image of the heavenly. Now, in context, Paul has just finished with the discussion of the fact of the resurrection. And he said back earlier, how can some of you say there is no resurrection? And then he goes through a very lengthy discussion. But apparently there were some questions remaining. And so in this portion, Paul begins to deal with those, such as how are the dead raised? What kind of body will they have? Now, we've already spoken of the Jewish roots through the Sadducees of the denial of the resurrection and the Greek roots of the denial, with the Greek roots feeding the Gnostic philosophy of the time that the body is inherently evil. So a resurrection would really not be desirable. On the other hand, some of the Jewish rabbis were teaching that the resurrection body would be identical in every way to the earthly body. If you're interested, there's a section on this in the Jewish apocryphal book of Baruch, but we won't go into that further. But you could see echoes of the idea in the question the Sadducees asked Jesus about the woman that had seven husbands. She had seven husbands. Whose wife will she be in the resurrection? And Jesus said, you guys just don't get it. You know, no one gets married in the resurrection. They're not married. They're not given in marriage. They're more similar to the angels. Now, Paul was very aware of the Jewish ceremonial ideas, the Jewish traditions, and the various schools from the rabbis that were being taught. He knew all this local Jewish thought. And so he wants to dispel this notion for at least the Jewish members of the church. And so he's carefully pointing out the differences between earthly and heavenly so the church understands. And this comes down to us today. And so he's using four examples to make his point. First, from nature. The second, explaining the resurrection body. Third, contrasting earthly to heavenly. And finally, the fourth being the resurrection of Christ, in which they've already believed, and which is, of course, the foundation of the church, both then and now. And so we're going to go through these one by one. Nature. Here Paul speaks to denial of resurrection, and not he's not addressing human philosophy in the idea that spiritual is good, bodily is bad, so the resurrection would be undesirable. Here he speaks through skepticism, you know, where someone would say, well, how can that possibly happen? We have legions of skeptics outside the church now that think we're crazy to believe the things we believe. And so Paul takes an example. He calls them fools. And so he starts with the natural, planting seeds. A grain of corn becomes a tall stalk. You can go in the cornfield and lay down and take a nap. It's very cool on a sunny day. The stalk and the shocks and everything do not look anything like the seed that you plant. And so he's saying the future body is unlike the present body. It's dissimilar. Now, if you look at John 12:24, Jesus says what? Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it abides alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. And he's speaking, of course, in his impending demise. So after the resurrection, the body of Jesus was both similar and different, because he appeared and disappeared as he wished and could come into a room without the use of the door. He could be recognized by his disciples, but he didn't seem to be bound by walls or time or space. He was different. In the planting and harvesting, there's still an element of continuity. So what I'm saying is the corn stalk grows corn. The wheat grows wheat. The oats are oats. You never plant oats, okay, and get wheat. Doesn't happen. And so after Jesus reveals himself to the disciples, they recognize his wounds. They knew him. Going all the way back to Genesis, we read, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit after their kind, with seed in them on the earth. And so the process of seeds yielding a new body of plants, which in turn bears seed for the next generation, has been with us from the beginning. And so Paul is referencing this. And so he speaks in the form of the resurrection body to the multiple forms of created body: men, beasts, birds, fish, sun, moon, stars. All bodies created by God, all quite different in their own way. And so our modern technology today shows even more difference in the heavenly host of stars, and even more of them, far beyond what Paul could have seen in his day. We also study the various birds and beasts, and what do we find out there? An infinite variety and an infinite sets of function which enable them to exist. And so, whether beasts, birds, men, fish, or stars and planets, they're all different. God was able to create this infinite variety. Why then would he be restrained or constrained to create a resurrection body for each one of us? Paul says, also, so is the resurrection of the dead. see it's sown a perishable body, it's raised an imperishable body, not to die again. Sown in dishonor, raised in glory. Sown in weakness, raised in power. And so we see these contrasts. And so he goes on to highlight four important contrasts between the earthly body and the resurrection body. And Paul uses the extended example of a sower who plants seeds and they'll sprout and produce a crop. And so over here it's planted in the springtime. Over here it's harvested at harvest time. Now, we know that the seed dies when it's planted, but in its death, it produces a new plant. So we have first perishable versus imperishable. Sown a perishable body, but raised imperishable. We all know that it's appointed unto man once to die. We all know it. We don't spend a lot of time thinking about it. From the most humble to the most high, all will perish. From the days of sin in the garden, men are born with a mortal body, which is destined to die. Adam was told by the sweat of his brow he would eat bread until he returned to the dust. He said, from the dust you were taken, and to the dust you're going to return. However, the resurrected body will not be like this. It will be imperishable. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his great mercy has caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to obtain an inheritance which is imperishable and undefiled and will not fade away, reserved in heaven for you. As 1 Peter 1, verses 3 and 4. The next contrast is dishonor and glory. Sown in dishonor but raised in glory, the fall of man introduced sin into creation, and as such, creation was marred. Dishonor was brought into man who was created to honor God. That's our purpose. All men are imperfect, and even those who are saved and do their best to glorify God are what? Still imperfect. You find your missionaries such as Paul and some of your great evangelists were still very much aware of their imperfections, areas they fell short. And if you get to the point where you're not aware of any of these things, then you need to work on that. In all sorts of ministry, from missions to churches, you will find a lot of work for God. You'll find a lot of sacrifice, a lot of service. What will you also find? Disputes, pride, personality conflicts, people insisting on getting their own way to the detriment of the ministry. And you may think this should not be so with people who are doing ministry, with people who are servants of God, but it is so. It is so. And I've lived too long and seen too much to ever even think about denying that or letting someone else deny it. It's out there. This speaks to the nature of fallen man. And so the believer is going to die in a state of imperfection or dishonor. But when the same believer is raised, he's going to be raised in glory. Now, we do not know exactly what this glory will be, but we know that we shall see Christ just as he is. And so we read, "Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not appeared as yet what we shall be. We know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him just as he is." And of course, this is John talking about also the resurrection. Weakness and power. Shown in weakness, raised in power. I love that song, by the way. Men can die of many things, accidents, disease. This has been brought to the forefront by the pandemic. You know, and people have been very worried about both themselves and their families. You know, will somebody get it? Is someone going to go to the hospital? Might someone die? So our bodies are naturally weak. Not one of us can protect our bodies from all harm. Okay, we have to run to the doctor. Maybe we have to go to the hospital. Maybe we have to get treatments. Maybe we have to get operations. We cannot protect ourselves from eventual death. Can't be done. Babies at the beginning of life must be constantly cared for and protected from harm. And also old people at the end of life must be cared for in the same manner and protected to help them prolong their life. You know, they're still clinging to life even though their vitality is much diminished. You can see that when you go visit in a nursing home, which we hope to be able to go and do at some point in time. What the nature of this power, sown in weakness, raised in power? We don't know. We don't know. I mean, when we look at Jesus, who walked on water to get out to the boat with his disciples, or who commanded the winds and the waves to be still, there's some glimpses there of power. There's going to be something. And we know we shall be like him. Natural and spiritual. That's the last contrast. Sown a natural body, raised a spiritual body. Now, our bodies today are natural or earthly. We're subject to ailments. We're subject to temptation. That's the nature of the natural man. The spiritual body is different. We get a glimpse or two. For instance, as I said before, Jesus told the Sadducees that those who are worthy to attain resurrection will neither marry nor be given in marriage, nor can they die anymore. Now, not being able to die is a concept so large and so alien to our train of thought, it's hard to get your hands around it. It's difficult to grasp it. Starting in verse 45, Paul introduced the concepts of the two Adams. The first one we meet in Genesis. The first man, Adam, became a living soul. Paul goes on to say that the last Adam became a life-giving spirit. So the natural man came first. Adam died and returned to the dust from whence he came. That's well known. Had a relative one time that was buried not far from the road, and they moved the road. And so this individual had to be moved. And they dug up the grave. Now, it's a family story from long, long time ago. And they had a screen there. And they threw the dirt through the screen. They found on top of the screen one leg bone. That's all. That's all that was left. And they moved that and reinterred it elsewhere, and they built their road. Everything else was dust. And so, as we look at the very, very many millions of people that are buried, and especially from years ago, you can rest assured they've turned to dust. So we see that the first man is from the earth, literally from the earth, made from the dust of the earth. He's earthy. Second is from heaven. And even when he was named, you shall call his name Yeshua, for he shall save his people from their sin. For those of us then who have believed in Jesus, we'll bear his heavenly image in the resurrection. So we're sown in the ground one way, but we're going to be raised in quite a different way. And this is essentially the message of this particular text. We'll have our closing hymn, which is number 239.